and welcome to the Mean Time to Insight podcast, brought to you by Enterprise Management Associates and presented by EMA Vice President of Research, Seamus McGillicuddy. The EMA Mean Time to Insight podcast explores emerging trends and technologies in the world of network infrastructure and operations.
Moving on to like more general AI, and as you mentioned, machine learning as being sort of like the real technology behind a lot of what IT vendors are doing. I've been looking at it in my research. Basically, another piece of shorthand around this topic is AI ops, for instance, which I believe you could define as AI for IT operations. Just applying things like machine learning and other analytical technologies in learning technologies, intelligent algorithms to IT operations tools and processes. I've seen some interest around a lot of different, I mean, one of the first things I usually see from a vendor when they get into this is just anomaly detection, which is really simple, being able to sort of like highlight, for instance, these are logs that are unusual, or, you know, do some analysis and figure out what it means. You know, the human do that analysis. And then, you know, they advance to like, well, we'll write some algorithms that can actually try to figure out what that anomaly is. And maybe that leads to problem isolation, root cause analysis, remediation suggestions, things like that. I also see interest in things like improved event correlation and alarm management, intelligent escalation of events to subject matter experts, things like that. And that can be across all of IT operations, even security, or it can be network focuses, which is the implication of this podcast. But what do you see as like some potential opportunities around that kind of technology?
Yeah, great question. And I'm going to preface my answer by saying this is why I'm not so excited about everybody throwing the term AI around. Because again, AI being a parent term under which machine learning falls as one of the technical mechanisms to do this human-like decision-making process, we've been doing ML in tech for a long time. To various degrees, depending on the specific niche of tech. You mentioned security. And so I can give you what is already going on and also where I think we're heading. So, excuse me, just as a quick example, doing anomaly detection is a great use case for using applying a model like clustering to, you know, under the hood, there's some math going on, maybe the application of like a Euclidean distance, right? For example, to find out where things fall, and you identify outliers from the norm, and then you generate a ticket or whatever, you know, your workflow is. A SOC is still going to look at that. And what I've found is that over time, the number of false positives have decreased as people have fine-tuned models so that they produce more accurate results. So I think that that's going to be something that we see, is that people have trust more in a lot of these workflows, automated programmatic workflows that are happening under the hood, because they're producing more accurate results. The reason I say that is because not long ago, a friend of mine works for it's a para-government organization here in New York that they do cybersecurity, and they still have a level one SOC that has to mine through all the alerts that their system creates. And yes, it uses these algorithms to generate the alerts, to identify anomalies, and 3/4 of them were false positives. And so they still had to mine through that, but that's decreasing. Now, how folks are making that more accurate, I know that's going to depend on how they're fine-tuning algorithms and how they're maybe applying a different model and doing things, and that's fine. On the more network operations side, it comes back to data and ingesting data, which is why this is all, it's like not that all network engineers are becoming data scientists and data analysts, but my goodness, it's a big part of what we're doing now. So we're ingesting all of this data in order to identify how do these things relate to each other? Because you got to remember that here we are in 2024. This system that we care about, the network and all its adjacent components, is not my computer with a box under the desk and an IDF down the hall with some switches and like a bare metal server, or even an ESXi server with some VMs on it. Like that's silly. There's connections over the public internet to various services around the world, maybe regionally, containers, third-party DNS. My front end is in Azure. My back end is in AWS. I don't own this. I have an SD-WAN. And all of those components are directly impact my application performance, application delivery, which is really what we care about. That's why we're even doing any of this stuff, because we want access to our data in the form of an application. So how do I mine through all that? So I think that's where, you know, that's a major use case for machine learning specifically, is being able to ingest, normalize, standardize, transform if necessary, these various types and formats of data. So that way we can programmatically compare, find correlation, find causal relationships, find patterns. Some patterns might then turn us, or rather show us that there is a DDoS attack that is occurring, or something like that. It's the difference between something that's just bad, I have a site or a device that's down, and something that's weird. Weird is hard for us to identify. It's subjective, but it's also hard for us to see in like the various alerts and data. So as an example, let's say I have 200 gig links in my data center, right? One's active, one's standby. Now, Seamus, I would never design it this way because I want to make use of both of my links and have them like load balance or something. But let's say I got an active link and a standby link. Active link is fine. My standby link is usually just a meg or two of control plane data. And I see it jump to 10 megs. That's a gigantic statistical increase, but it doesn't affect anything. 10 megs on a 100 gig link. But then I start to see it increase a little bit more. Again, it's not going to fire off any alerts. It doesn't meet any thresholds. But with machine learning using like linear regression or auto regression or whatever time series model, you start to determine a trend, and you can throw an alert saying, look, this doesn't affect anything, but this is weird. You see what I mean? It's not necessarily that a site is down, throw the red thing up on my NOC, the graph that we have in the NOC, but there is something that you need to look at. And because it is based on, let's say, flow data and interface metrics, we know in the system, you know, the way that the program was written, send that to level one network engineer, not to the SOC or not to our application developers. All that stuff is being done right now. And so we're going to see the accuracy of that improve, continue to improve, and we're going to see the growing trust between network operators and these systems that do that for you programmatically. So yes, there's root cause analysis. What about push and configuration? I mean, I know you remember this because of what you do for a living, Seamus, but you remember when everyone was talking about SDN, software-defined networking, constantly?
Yes.
It was every blog, every podcast, and then it disappeared from the world and nobody talked about it. And then we had intent-based networking and everybody's like, yay. And every blog, every podcast, I was part of that. I wrote a white paper on intent-based networking. And then it just dried up. Nobody was talking about it. And I'm looking at this now saying, so what you're telling me is that my system can ingest all of this data, find the relationships that are very difficult or impossible for me to find, and then tell me to go look at this thing and maybe in the near future also push some config to fix it. Isn't that what we've been talking about this whole time with SDN and intent-based networking and all these things? So I think this is another step in that direction to further abstracting us from the network. And no, I don't think it's going to be the USS Enterprise where Lieutenant Commander Geordi LaForge just says, you know, computer, reroute power and all these things. And but we're heading in that direction. And I think that's what we're going to see, not in the near term, but in the longer term, is now that we have this data, incorporating this conclusion that this is the likely problem, and it's tied to probability, by the way, it's 80% this device and this interface. Now push this configuration to resolve that. That's not hard to do, by the way. It's just that folks are not necessarily doing that yet. And I do think that we're going to get there where we start to see auto remediation. Right now, as of 2024, early 2024, I'm seeing the, not auto remediation, but the programmatic approach to root cause analysis to eliminate the human from the clue chaining. And by the way, clue chaining is fun. I was a network engineer for a long time, and it's like, it's what we do as engineers. It's like, oh, well, that's going on over there. Well, let's go check it. Let's check this out. And then let's go look at this. And the thing is, a good engineer, you know, we're good at it. We eventually find the problem. But, you know, when we have the complexity of the network, the system that we have today, 3 days to troubleshoot latency that's hosing an application is not acceptable. So that's why we're doing what we're doing with ML. And I think that, you know, when you said, where are we heading? Where we are is compelling to me. And just being able to ingest this information and find interesting new information in it. And where we're heading, I think, is going to be the auto remediation part.
All right, Phil. I think we're running short on time here. One last thing I wanted to just cover real quick is, how do you figure out if this stuff works? You know, you're an IT person. You're getting marketed AI from vendors and from people trying to displace your vendors. Like, mm-hmm. how do you figure out whether this stuff works? Like, I've done a little exploration here, and you know, I think one useful thing to see from a vendor is some sort of explainable AI capability, like even like a probability score on something, mm-hmm. or like graphical displays of things like decision trees, like, and you know, explanations of how an algorithm achieved a certain insight. Things like that can be helpful. I also find that people just, they like to have conversations with their vendors about what this is. Like, what are you doing? What are you good at? Like, how did you, like, tell me about your how you came about developing these algorithms and how you train them, like what kinds of networks you train them on, how it would learn to work in my network, things like that. Just good conversations with sales engineering, product managers, whatever, can really help. Because I think you mentioned the word trust. It's just a few minutes ago. I think mm-hmm. it's not just figure out, does this work, but can I trust the results when, you know, someone buys this and tells me to use it? What's your perspective on all that?
Yeah. It's not a viable product if you can't trust the result. That's plain and simple. And for a time, you know, I'm aware of vendors that were working on implementing an LLM in order to interrogate data, and the results were very, very low in their accuracy. It was not a viable product. Now, over time, we improved that. So that's very important. How do you trust that data? I think you mentioned one thing, the probability score. Other people call them confidence scores. I've heard different vendors use different terms. How that gets calculated, I'm not exactly sure. It's going to be vendor to vendor. Like, how do you know it's 82% likely accurate? But in any case, that is part of it, you know, because if nothing else, it disarms the hard and fast, this is the answer. And so it kind of gives the system a little breathing room there. But I think over time, as you use a system and it produces a result, we call them factors in our insight system, that says this is the likely cause. And then you go and explore and you find it. Yeah, it was right. There you go. I mean, it's evidence over time. So that's going to instill more confidence in an engineer using these tools. And then eventually lead to enough confidence and trust to allow the system to then programmatically push remediation configuration or whatever it has to do. So I think that's part of it. And you know, when you first implement a technology, there's all that hype, right? And it's not until you have the, what does Gartner call it, the trough of disillusionment, whatever it is, when you go through that process of it being deployed in production, people using it, that eventually you start to see, all right, these are the actual use cases for what we're doing. This is actually how it's going to fit into my tech stack. I think, you know how Missouri, the state of Missouri is called the show. Is it Missouri? It's called the show me state. I hope I'm right there. I think it is. That's how I look at tech marketing. That's how I think vendors should avoid the whole marketecture and smoke and mirrors nonsense by taking that approach of potential customers, prospects, folks coming and saying, hey, you're talking about AI. Show me what you're doing. And I think that vendors need to be willing to explain from a technical perspective insofar as they can. And, you know, maybe there's some proprietary information to explain this is how we do it. this is the problem that we're solving. Because I promise you, there isn't that much variance in the actual algorithm. I mean, linear regression is linear regression. It, you know, whether I'm doing it or a Holt-Winters algorithm is a Holt-Winters algorithm, whether I'm doing it or my competitor is doing it. There's going to be other stuff in the workflow that's proprietary, sure. But ultimately, you know, are you using a columnar database or a relational database? I mean, these are not secret sauce kind of stuff. So in my personal opinion, Seamus, I do not think that vendors should be saying words like magic, secret sauce, black box under the hood. Well, under the hood in the context, so let me show you what's under the hood. I don't like that because it just immediately sets me up for, oh, so you don't even know what's going on or I can't trust you. Like, show me. Oh, okay. This is how it works. This is how you arrived at that conclusion. That makes sense. Even if it like, I don't understand the technology that well, at least you're walking me through the process. And that engenders trust between a prospect and a vendor, between the tech community and a vendor with a new product. I think that's very important. And I've adopted that for myself personally and what I do for a living. And I think it's effective. I used to be a pre-sales solutions architect as well. And that was my job. The whole show me, like, you know, I want you to pay me all this money. So let me just show you, let me prove it to you, whether that's just an explanation, a demo, spending time with you to understand that this is how we get to the solution. Again, never saying the word, it's pixie dust. I've heard that in presentations. Well, it's pixie dust. And I'm like, well, I don't want to be in this presentation anymore. What do you think I am? Like some kind of child that can't understand, like, show me what you're doing. Cause I'm about to spend, you know, $3 million on this PO that we have on the table. So I think that's a human to human conversation and not necessarily technology. From a technological standpoint though, we're going to see things become more accurate, and that in and of itself will engender the trust that you mentioned.
Great. All right, Phil, thanks for joining me today. It was a great conversation. Appreciate having you as a guest on the podcast.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. And thanks for everyone for listening today, and tune in next time for our next episode.
Thanks, Seamus, for all your great insights on today's topic, and thank you to everyone who listened. Learn more about Enterprise Management Associates, research and consulting services by visiting enterprisemanagement.com.